Every time you pay your taxes, a tiny fraction of a cent might actually be going toward buying diesel fuel for a massive industrial fishing ship.
Right, a ship that's operating like 10,000 miles away from your home.
Exactly. And today we are doing a deep dive into the hidden economics of global overfishing. It honestly completely flips the script on how we think about the seafood we eat.
It is quite the paradox, honestly. I mean, we tend to think of ocean depletion purely as an environmental failure or, you know, an issue of lax regulation.
Like it's just a bunch of pirate ships out there breaking the law.
Right. But if you really look under the hood, we are essentially paying for our own ecological decline through global tax systems. And most of us have absolutely no idea that this transaction is even taking place.
Yeah, which is just wild to think about. So our mission for this deep dive is to explore those exact mechanics, the hidden financial engines of overfishing. And we want to decode the incredibly intense high-stakes trade negotiations that are trying to reverse this trend before the global supply just, well, collapses.
Which is a very real possibility.
It is. And our guide for this journey is a 2024 paper published in NPJ Ocean Sustainability. And this wasn't just a small study. It was penned by this massive coalition of scientists representing every inhabited continent on Earth.
Yeah, led by the researcher Yu-Rashid Sumaila. It's a really comprehensive piece of work.
Okay, let's unpack this. How did we get to a point where governments are actively bankrolling the emptying of the ocean?
Well, what's fascinating here is that this is not just an environmental issue, though. Obviously, the ecological stakes are astronomical. The authors of this paper make it explicitly clear that we are looking at a multi-layered crisis.
Right. It's not just about saving the whales or the fish.
Exactly. It is a crisis of global trade. It is a massive contributor to climate change through CO2 emissions. And crucially, it is an immediate threat to the food security of some of the most vulnerable coastal communities on the planet.
So it hits literally everything.
Yeah. It really does. To understand the collapse of global fisheries, you cannot just look at the boats or the nets or, you know, the fish themselves. Yeah. You have to look at the financial engine driving those boats out into the water in the first place. You have to follow the government money.
Follow the money. Always good advice. So let's break down that financial engine. The paper basically divides government funding or subsidies into three distinct categories.
Right. Beneficial, ambiguous, and capacity enhancing.
Yeah, and I want to make sure we clearly distinguish these because I assume, you know, not all government spending on the ocean is inherently destructive, right?
No, not at all. That is a crucial distinction. And the researchers are very careful to highlight that beneficial subsidies are absolutely vital.
Okay, so what do those look like?
Think of these as investments in the ocean's savings account. These are funds dedicated to things like establishing and maintaining marine protected areas.
Like national parks, but underwater.
Exactly. It also includes money spent on fisheries management, you know, paying scientists to actually monitor the health of fish populations and funding fishery research and development.
Which makes total sense. Those are the investments that help ensure the ocean can replenish itself year after year.
Right. They are actively helping the ecosystem.
Okay. So then you have the ambiguous subsidies, which the sources suggest could kind of go either way, depending on how they are applied.
Yeah. Things like fisher assistance programs or vessel buybacks.
Right, like those might reduce the fleet size, which is good, or they might just put cash in the pockets of people who then go buy newer, faster boats, which is bad.
Precisely. It's a gray area.
But then we hit the third category, the dark side of the ledger, capacity-enhancing subsidies.
Yeah.
And when you look at the raw data in the paper detailing the sheer scale of these harmful subsidies, it completely dwarfs the beneficial ones.
Oh, not even close.
No, it's crazy. I mean, we're talking about fuel subsidies alone accounting for nearly $8 billion U.S. dollars globally. And then tax exemptions follow closely behind at over $5 billion.
And we should point out that this massive spending is heavily dominated by developed nations.
Right. So explain the term capacity enhancing for a second, because that seems to be the absolute key to understanding the mechanics of this destruction.
It really is. So in fisheries economics, capacity basically means the ability to extract fish from the water.
So just how good a boat is at catching fish.
Exactly. It encompasses the size of the boat, the horsepower of the engine, the physical reach of the nets, and even the refrigeration systems on board. So when a government heavily subsidizes fuel or provides massive tax exemptions for boat construction, they are artificially lowering the cost of doing business.
Okay, so it's like the government giving you a prepaid gas card, specifically so you can drive a massive SUV further and further into the wilderness just to hunt the very last deer.
That is a remarkably accurate analogy.
Because without that prepaid gas card, you'd never make the trip, right? The fuel costs alone would ensure it just wouldn't make financial sense to drive that far for one deer.
Exactly. Let's look at the physical reality of commercial fishing, especially deep sea or long distance operations. They aren't just out there casting lines like a guy on a dock.
Right. They have these massive setups.
Yeah. They are often dragging massive, heavy nets through the water column or directly across the ocean floor. And the drag resistance of those nets is just immense.
It takes a lot of power to pull that much weight through water.
Exactly. Overcoming that resistance requires an astronomical amount of diesel fuel. If these fleets had to pay the true, unsubsidized market price for that fuel, I mean, many of their expeditions would be wildly unprofitable.
The captains would look at the math and simply keep the boats in port.
Yes. So the subsidies are quite literally the only thing keeping the propellers turning. Because governments are fitting the bill for the fuel, it artificially incentivizes what the paper calls overcapacity. The economic natural selection that would normally limit the size of a fleet is just totally suspended.
So as a result, there are simply too many boats with too much power chasing too few fish.
Right. And there is a secondary consequence here, too.
The emissions, right. Because they are burning all that artificially cheap diesel to drag those heavy nets, the paper points out that this directly exacerbates CO2 emissions.
Which creates a perfectly terrible feedback loop.
It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, we are paying taxes to burn fossil fuels, which actively pumps carbon into the atmosphere, all while destroying marine biodiversity.
And that biodiversity is the very ecosystem that helps sequester carbon and maintain planetary balance in the first place. The fishing sector's carbon footprint is heavily bloated by this exact dynamic.
So you are actively funding the degradation of your own life support system? That paints a pretty bleak picture of the economics.
It's sobering, for sure.
So if we know fuel subsidies are the primary engine driving this overcapacity, the obvious question is, you know, exactly who is using this government money? And where are they sailing these heavily subsidized SUVs of the sea?
Well, this brings us to a major focus of the research, distant water fishing, or DWF.
DWF.
Okay. This refers to nations that send their industrial fishing fleets far beyond their own national territories. They are traveling thousands of miles to fish out in the high seas.
Which are the international waters that belong to no single nation.
Right. Or, even more controversially, they are paying to fish inside the exclusive economic zones of other countries. And these are often much poorer countries.
Wait a minute. I want to push back on this for a second, just to make sure we are rigorously analyzing the economics here.
Sure, go ahead.
If a highly developed nation simply has the advanced technology, the capital, and the infrastructure to build a fleet capable of safely navigating and fishing the high seas, isn't that just a natural competitive advantage in global trade?
Like, they just built a better mousetrap.
Yeah. I mean, some countries manufacture better cars, some write better software, some build better boats. Why is this specifically being flagged as a global crisis by this coalition of scientists?
It is an excellent point to raise, actually, because that is the exact free market argument often used to defend the practice in international forums.
It sounds perfectly logical on the surface.
It does. But the flaw in that argument, according to the data, is that this is not a natural competitive advantage at all. It is a completely manufactured one.
Manufactured by the subsidies.
Exactly. The authors cite evidence indicating that fishing in the high seas is predominantly supported through these government subsidies. In a truly free market, vacuuming up fish in the middle of the Pacific Ocean is largely a money-losing venture.
Ah, okay. The logistics, the fuel, the maintenance, it's just too expensive.
Right. So they aren't actually out-competing anyone on efficiency or skill. They are just outspending their rivals using domestic taxpayer money to absorb the losses of a bad business model.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
They aren't better at fishing. They just have deeper dockets from the government.
Precisely. And the real tragedy here, as the researchers highlight, is the impact on low-income countries.
Right, because we are talking about nations with a significantly lower gross domestic product than the countries doing the subsidizing.
And these coastal nations desperately rely on local wild-caught fish for basic food and nutrition security.
I want to dig into that impact, actually. How exactly does a distant fleet affect a local fisher? Because if the big boats are out in the international high seas and the local fishers are close to shore, aren't they fishing entirely different waters?
They are fishing different waters, yeah, but they are often chasing the exact same fish.
Because the fish move.
Exactly. Many of the most commercially valuable species are highly migratory. They travel through the high seas to get to coastal waters.
Okay, I see where this is going.
When heavily subsidized distant water fleets intercept those migratory fish populations in the high seas before they can ever reach the coast, or when they set up shop just on the edge of a developing nation's territorial waters, they are effectively mining the food security of vulnerable populations.
Because a local artisanal fisher in a small boat simply cannot compete with a subsidized industrial trawler operating just over the horizon.
Not a chance.
Let's look at the actual ledger of who is sending these fleets across the globe, because the numbers are just staggering. When you look at the top subsidizers overall, China is the massive outlier here.
They really are.
They're spending over $7 billion total, and the vast majority of that falls squarely in that red capacity-enhancing category.
Right, and they are followed by the European Union as a block at roughly $3.5 billion, and then the USA, the Republic of Korea, and Japan.
And the numbers become even more targeted when we isolate just the distant water fleets, right? The ships actively leaving their own waters to fish elsewhere.
Yeah. The global total for harmful subsidies specifically supporting these distant water fleets is $1.54 billion U.S. dollars. And that money props up over 6,700 massive vessels worldwide.
Breaking that down further, I mean, China alone spent $629 million on harmful distant water subsidies. And that supports an armada of 4,615 vessels.
And the paper notes, they log almost 1 million hours of fishing effort in a single year.
Just try to picture that scale in the water. It's almost unimaginable. And the European Union operates 964 distant water vessels, supported by $279 million.
Plus Japan, Korea, Taiwan, they are all spending hundreds of millions to keep hundreds of massive ships operating thousands of miles from home.
So you have this industrial armada completely dependent on government checks to stay afloat while systematically undermining the food security of developing nations. The obvious question is, like, why do the governments writing those checks keep getting away with it?
Well, here's where it gets really interesting, because the international community is actually trying to stop it.
Right. The paper focuses heavily on the World Trade Organization, the WTO. And getting the WTO to agree on a binding global ban is roughly like trying to get 160 rival companies to voluntarily give up their biggest tax breaks at the exact same time.
It is agonizingly slow.
Very slow. But in June 2022, they actually achieved a historic milestone. They adopted a fishery subsidies agreement that established binding global regulations.
It was a monumental step forward, really. It aligned with years of urgent recommendations from the global scientific community. For the first time, trade ministers committed to compelling governments to assess the legality and the sustainability of the fishing activities they subsidize.
It proved that international consensus on ocean health is actually possible.
It did.
And the 2022 agreement successfully banned some of the most egregious practices. Like, they banned subsidies for illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, which is generally referred to as IUU fishing.
Oh.
They also banned subsidies for fishing populations that are already scientifically proven to be overfished. And they banned subsidies targeting completely unmanaged fish populations out in the high seas.
Well, good things.
Yeah, on paper. If you're a casual observer, that sounds like they basically solved the problem.
It is a victory, but it is an incomplete one. And this is the crux of the author's urgent plea to the WTO. The 2022 agreement tackled the most acute symptoms of the crisis, but it completely missed the root cause. It didn't ban the broad capacity-enhancing subsidies, like the massive fuel subsidies and tax exemptions we've been unpacking, the things that actually build and launch the oversized fleets in the first place.
I see. So they essentially said, you can't use taxpayer money to fish illegally, and you can't use it to fish an empty batch of ocean. But they didn't take away the prepaid gas card for the SUV.
Exactly. They left the core financial engine of overcapacity totally intact.
And this omission is a huge deal, because the paper points out that eliminating those specific capacity-enhancing subsidies is explicitly mandated by the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal 14.6.
Yes, the international community had already agreed they were supposed to prohibit these forms of subsidies as soon as possible after the year 2020.
We're well past that now. And this is why the upcoming February 2024 ministerial meeting mentioned in the paper is viewed as make or break. The pressure is incredibly high for the WTO to finish the job they started in 2022.
They need to craft the supplementary regulations that finally turn off the tap for fuel and vessel construction subsidies.
But, you know, as with any high-stakes trade negotiation where billions of dollars are on the line, there are armies of lawyers and lobbyists actively looking for a backdoor.
Oh, absolutely. Which raises an important question. How do you implement a global ban without entirely dismantling the domestic fishing industries of powerful nations overnight?
Right, because politically that's just a non-starter.
Exactly. So the negotiators at the WTO are currently considering what are called exemptions. Specifically, they are debating exemptions for subsidies that are allocated to what they term managed stocks.
Okay, what does that mean?
The theory is that if a fish population is biologically diverse and being harvested sustainably, it should be okay to continue subsidizing the fleet that catches it.
Okay, I want you to imagine being a trade negotiator sitting in Geneva, and a wealthy nation slides a piece of paper across the desk saying, hey, don't worry, we're still subsidizing our massive fleet's fuel. But it's totally fine, because the specific fish we are targeting out in the middle of the Pacific are a managed stock.
Sounds pretty convenient.
Right. How do you actually verify that? It seems like a loophole big enough to drive a factory trawler through.
The authors of this paper see it as exactly that, a massive, glaring loophole. The danger here lies in the burden of proof. And the realities of ocean monitoring.
Because the oceans are huge.
Yeah, and the nations with the highest GDPs and the biggest distant water fleets have massive bureaucratic resources. If they can simply generate their own internal reports claiming their distant water fishing is sustainable without rigorous independent oversight out on the water, they could effectively exempt themselves from the ban entirely.
Oh, wow. So the expert coalition argues that if this managed stocks exemption is allowed to exist, the major subsidizers will exploit it to maintain the exact status quo.
Yes, because who is actually out there checking the nets thousands of miles from shore?
Nobody. That's exactly the problem.
Right. So the authors argue that subsidizers must be forced to rigorously and independently demonstrate the actual effectiveness of their sustainability measures, rather than just rubber stamping their own operations.
And the sources go further to define what a legitimate, ethically sound exemption would actually look like. Because, I mean, we have to acknowledge there are populations around the world who desperately need financial help to fish safely and feed their families.
Absolutely.
Under the banners of special and differentiated treatment, the paper states that exemptions should strictly be reserved for low-income countries. But even then, it shouldn't just be a blank check for them to build their own industrial fleets, right?
That is a vital point. The authors stipulate that even for low-income nations, subsidies should be highly restricted. They should only apply to small-scale fishers operating strictly within their own national waters, not distant water fleets.
Okay.
Furthermore, they should be utilizing low-impact techniques or engaging in indigenous or subsistence fishing.
Which means no massive bottom trawling nets, even if it's domestic.
Correct. And crucially, even for these vulnerable groups, the financial support must be entirely decoupled from anything that catalyzes overcapacity.
So what can they fund?
Well, a government could help a local community build a safer dock, for example, or provide grants for improved safety and navigation equipment. Those are beneficial.
But they cannot provide funds that allow a fisher to double the size of their nets, buy a drastically larger boat, or burn significantly more diesel.
No. It's the fundamental difference between helping a community feed itself safely and funding a commercial extraction operation.
Right. So what does this all mean? When we zoom out and look at this massive data dump from this global coalition of scientists, the narrative is alarmingly clear. The global ocean, which technically belongs to all of us, is suffering a slow-motion collapse because tax dollars from wealthy nations are artificially propping up industrial fleets.
Fleets that shouldn't economically be out there.
Exactly. These fleets are being paid by their governments to overextract resources from the high seas, which directly intercepts the fish supply and jeopardizes the coastal waters of vulnerable lower-income nations.
And the path to fixing it runs directly through the bureaucratic maze of the World Trade Organization. The authors of the paper use a wonderful term to describe what is at stake here. They call it infinity fish.
Infinity fish. I like that.
It is the idea that if we manage wild fisheries correctly, they are not a finite resource like coal or oil. They are pillars supporting food security, livelihoods, and cultural heritage forever. A truly renewable resource.
But achieving infinity fish requires global leaders to leverage their political authority to close these massive loopholes regarding managed stocks and to absolutely abolish the subsidies for distant water fleets.
It really reframes the whole concept of a cheap fish at the grocery store, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Which brings me to a final thought I want to leave you with, something to mull over that builds on everything we've talked about today. Imagine for a second that the WTO succeeds beyond our wildest dreams in these upcoming negotiations.
Okay.
Tomorrow, they completely ban all harmful capacity-enhancing subsidies. No more loopholes for managed stocks. No more prepaid gas cards for the SUVs of the sea. What happens the day after?
Wow. It would be an economic earthquake for global trade.
Exactly. If high seas fishing suddenly collapses because it finally has to reflect its true unsubsidized cost of operation, how would that sudden, massive geographical shift in seafood supply reshape global political power?
That's a massive question. Right. Who holds the cards when the massive distant water fleets of the world's superpowers are forced to stay in port? And what happens to global trade, and honestly to our own local diets, when the artificial price of a fish at the supermarket finally catches up to its true ecological cost?
It really makes you wonder what we've really been paying for all these years.
It does. A fascinating and incredibly necessary question for us to face.
Agreed.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.